Welcome to Hype episode 84.
Who is this?
I know, it's been like last year you heard this voice.
We missed you so much.
Oh, thank you very much, Pam. I'm finally back after an unintentionally long hiatus. My name is Selena and I'm joined by regular host Pam, who has been on the show, so you remember her voice, and Kristen and Caitlin. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hello.
So Marima and Kyle couldn't join us this week, but we do have Kristen and Caitlin stepping in, who are both, of course, on Hypeable.com. And Kristen actually joined us just last week for a special about The 100, which is the CW show that returned for its third season last week. And I just want to say at the top of the show, thank you so much for all of your feedback on that podcast. It was really nice to see so many people responding to our special. And the podcast episode that the other guys did last week with Amy Kaufman received a lot of really good comments as well. It's really encouraging getting all this great feedback, so please keep it coming. And we'll read some of that towards the end of the show. So before we get into the show, let me just start by saying the contact information, like always, so you can contact us as well with your thoughts on this episode or the show in general. You can email us, hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter at hypeablehype, and you can find us on hypeable.com, which is hypeable.com. Leave your comments in the little podcast post. Okay. So, as always, the first thing we're going to do on Hype is How We Hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom for the last week, or in my case, the last several weeks. Pam, why don't you go first?
Sure. So, I haven't been doing very much, but I have been slowly working my way towards all of the Oscar films that are nominated for Best Picture, because I like to stay up to date with that sort of thing. So, this week, I went to see The Big Short, and I was pleasantly surprised by that. And I feel like they did a pretty good job making very dry material seem interesting. And for those of you that don't know what The Big Short is about, it's pretty much about the stock markets and like the banks and like the housing loan crisis and stuff like that in the United States around like the early 2000s, if I remember correctly. So that was an interesting time at the movies for sure. I don't know if any of you guys have seen that yet, but it was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. Still not my favorite film of this Oscar year, but I did enjoy it. And then I've been listening to a bunch of music, trying to keep up with my New Year's resolution, which is like to listen to more. So this week I checked out Panic at the Disco's new album, which is really just lead singer Brendan Urie's new album, since he's the only remaining band member left in that. And that album was called Death of a Bachelor. It's very interesting because he kind of plays with the pop punk roots, but he also has added in a bit of like jazz and like swanky old vibe stuff here and there, and then like some new wave pop stuff and stuff like that. So if you're a fan of Panic at the Disco, you'll probably really enjoy it, because it's very much along the same lines as how they've kind of always been. But It's been getting a lot of buzz, like even with people that haven't been fans of the band before. So it's definitely worth just checking out. And I think it'd be really good too, like if you're working out and stuff, because it's pretty upbeat.
I like Panic at the Disco. I'm glad they're still around.
Yeah, there you go.
Which movie was your favorite of the Oscar season?
Oh my gosh, I'm still obsessed with Spotlight.
Okay, I haven't seen it yet.
Spotlight was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kristen, you've been watching another movie that's gotten a lot of Oscar buzz.
Yes, I usually am on top of my Oscar nominees and watching them and all of that. It's one of my favorite parts of the end of the year, like December, January. But this year I'm so far behind. And so I just saw Mad Max Fury Road like last week. Karen bought it, so we stayed home. And
oh, you
watched it
at home? Oh, interesting.
Yeah. It just came out on Blu-ray out here, or here, whatever. And it was good. I know there's a lot of people that really love that movie, and it's good. Like, it's a really good movie, but I don't know how I feel technically, it's absolutely brilliant. And so I'm sure, like, technical award-wise, it's going to be up there for consideration for all of the categories that it's nominated in. Like, it's going to be a contender as opposed to just one of those that they nominate just to nominate it. But I don't know about the others.
I was going to say, it's a shame that you didn't see it on the big screen, because that makes a lot of difference. Because I absolutely agree with you. Like, it's not a, it's a weird movie because it's not like, I don't know, I hate saying this, but it's not like the plot is super original, and it's not like the idea of this chase movie hasn't been done before. I think it's what people love about it is how unapologetically just badass it is. Like, here's this guy who's just said, I'm going to do this movie, and I'm going to do it 100%, and it's not going to be anything else but what I'm trying to make it be, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he just goes for it. And on the big screen, it just, because I'm not, I don't like those kinds of movies usually. Like, they're okay, but I'm not like blown away. But this one, I was just like, oh my God, this is awesome. And every time like something new happened, I was like, yeah, flaming guitar.
See, I totally know what you mean. I was a huge proponent of people seeing Gravity on the big screen because it was a different experience watching it at home, because I own it, watching it at home versus watching it on the big screen, because there's just it. There's so much to see and like think and feel, and yeah. So I know what you mean. I wish I had caught it in theaters, but you know, maybe it'll get a rerun at some point in in the future, and I can catch it on the big screen.
You should. It's worth it, definitely. And Caitlin, what have you been doing?
Well, as some of you know, I have been bedridden for the last like week and a half with a pinched nerve in my back, so I've been doing a lot of reading. I read Illuminae, which I know you guys talked about last week, and it was wonderful. I'm not usually a big fan of kind of experimental fiction, but this one was so ingenious, and it was such a creative way to tell a story. So,
and you read it on the like an actual physical book, right?
Yes, I bought a hardcover. I heard everyone saying buy this book, so I was like, I'm not going to read this on my Kindle. So that was wonderful. I'm currently on the third book of the Tamir Triad by Lynn Fluling. These books are a little older. They're fantasy set in a world where the ruling class is supposed to rule matrilineally, and then a king takes over, and then the whole land is cursed, and he kills off all his female family members who could possibly take the throne, and then except his sister, and then his sister gives birth to twins, and they use the boy to give the girl twin a boy form and grow her up to become the queen. It sounds weird.
It sounds great.
It's really fascinating because it kind of explores how the boy, who has no idea that he's a girl, starts growing up and kind of is being groomed without him knowing to become the queen eventually. So, it's really fascinating, and it kind of explores this idea of, you know, gender and what we expect of our gender roles and that kind of thing. So I'm really loving that. I'm about halfway through the last book, and I'm going to be very sad to be done with it. And then when I'm done with that, I'm moving on to the next Brandon Sanderson novel. He just released the sixth book in the Mistborn series, and I'll be listening to the audiobook of that one because I really love the narrator who always does Brandon Sanderson's books. So I'm on a huge book kick right now because it's hard to get out of bed for me.
I know. It's good that you're getting some reading done. That's really nice. And everyone who's listening, send your good thoughts and tweets to Caitlin, because I'm sure she can use it. I also read a lot of books because I was on holiday, which almost never happens. It's why I've been away for a couple of weeks. I gave myself a complete ban on the internet. That can be highly recommended, by the way. Just take, like, if you're feeling like a little stressed or you're feeling like overwhelmed by everything, just take a couple of days, turn your social media off, turn everything off, and just do like stuff you might have done back when the internet didn't exist, or like your parents might have done when the internet didn't exist. It's so freeing. And now I came back and I'm busier than ever, and I'm like completely too stressed again. But while I was having my internet-free holiday and I was in Malta and I was having lots of walks in the nature, I also read a bunch of books. Like, I think Kyle made the... I was listening to you guys' old shows, and Kyle made the hilarious commitment of 11 books a year, which Merrima couldn't stop laughing about, which I thought was the best thing that's ever happened on the show. But so I'm kind of... I kind of have a similar... What's it called? The resolution as Kyle. Not so much that I want to make sure I read 11 books a year, because I'm definitely going to do that, but that I'm going to read at least one book every month, because I go through these phases where I read like 10 books in a row and then I don't read anything for like 3 or 4 months because it's like it's so hard to find time for it. But this month I've already read more than my share. I finished About a Boy, which by Nick Hornby, which I only ever read half about, so I was pretty proud of that. It was very good. And I read because of guilt, basically, because when I wrote up that Merlin story about the lost years, the movie series based on T.A. Barron's novels, and I was like, haha, it's not BBC Merlin, this is awful. And Karen was like, but this is my favorite book. I was like, oh god. So I read it. So now I know what it's talking about. It's so cute. I love it so much. It was very, very cute. And that's called Merlin, The Lost Years. And I might check out some more of them when I have time. Then I read Where Rainbows End, which is the book that Love, Rosie is based on. And I love that movie, Love, Rosie. I've seen it like 3 times.
Oh, you know what's so funny? Is here in America, that book is just called Love, Rosie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
I read that to you by Cecilia Ahern. I was like, oh, it's got a different title. How interesting.
Yeah. Well, it was Where Rainbows End was like the book she wrote. And then when the movie came out, I think they retitled the book too. So maybe that's why. Just to make it easier for people.
Well, I read it like years ago, but yeah, I think they just called it Love, Rosie here because it's been around for a while.
Interesting. That's really interesting.
I picked it up right after like P.S. I Love You came out. So
yeah.
Yeah, but that's a good book. That's so funny.
It's a good book. Well, no, I was just going to say on this book, it's a really good book. I really enjoyed it. But I do have to say, well, I watched the movie before and I think I still prefer it just because it's a little less depressing. So I'm like, oh, but their journey is much simpler in the movie, obviously. So I don't have to feel so bad for them. But it was a really, really good book. It was written all in letters, which usually I don't like very much. But I really liked it for this one. And finally, I read, and this is just for me, and I really, really enjoy this series, and I can highly recommend it. It's Jean or Sean Auel. It's A-U-E-L, and it's this series called Earth's Children, and I don't know if you guys have ever read it. It came out in, like, the 80s. And I think it's still going on. It's like the Game of Thrones of history, basically, of ancient history. It follows this girl who lives in like this prehistoric world, and she grows up with Neanderthals, and then she goes off on her own. And I read the second book in the series, which is called A Valley of Horses. And they're really long, and they're amazing. It's like you spend like 3 pages describing all the trees, but like in a good way. And you just immerse yourself in this prehistoric world and you follow this girl, and it's like all this girl power in some strange way, like because she takes so much agency and she's like so badass and she survives on her own and she befriends a horse. And I just, it's so good, you guys. I highly recommend that series. It's, you need time to read it, but it's worth it. So those are all my books. And my next project for February is Red Rising, which was recommended to us on the show. So we'll see how that goes. Thank you. So see, the recommending goes both ways. And moving on now to our news for this week. It's been a pretty quiet news week, really. So we don't have that many stories, but that's great because that means we have more time for TV shows, because so many TV shows have come back and we want to talk about all of them. Going straight into the first news story, it's a bit of a follow-up from what you guys talked about last week.
Yes. So if you joined us for last week's show, you'll know that Merrima and our guest host Amy and I talked a lot about the Oscar So White movement. And then we also talked about just kind of like the Academy in general. And interestingly enough, now we have an update on that. The Academy has decided to completely revamp the rules for their membership process, which is like, I think everybody's mind was a little bit blown that, you know, this is a long time coming, but they moved so swiftly to try and rectify this. So Cheryl Boone Isaacs, who is the president of the Academy, released a full statement with all of the details about this. If you want to read her full comments, we highly suggest you go over to highbible.com to do that. But we're going to run over the new rules for you guys here. So these are going to begin later this year. So they're not going to go into effect before voting for these Oscars begin. They won't affect this show, but they'll affect next year's show. So now
every member's voting status is only going to last 10 years, and then they'll be renewed only if the member has been active during the previous decade. So this is kind of meant to freshen things up and make sure that there's not, you know, like really old people that are not with the times kind of voting on these films for a lifetime. And then you can receive lifetime voting rights if you've done 3 10-year terms with the Academy, or if you've been nominated for an Oscar, if you've won. And this is actually going to be applied retroactively to the current members too. So anybody that's still a member now that hasn't been active in the last 10 years might possibly lose their vote for the next Oscars. And yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this affects next year's crop of films for sure. What did you guys think about all of this? Because like I said, I think a lot of people were just like, wow, but good.
I mean, it's about time. It was getting really easy to predict what movies were going to get Oscar attention because you knew exactly the audience that was watching the movies. Like, you knew that they weren't watching every movie of the year. They were watching the 10 or so that everyone thinks, you know, should be coming out in December, and that's what they watch because it was, you know, a bunch of older white guys that were all you know, a part of the Hollywood, you know, golden age that are still alive and kicking, and they've been sitting in their Oscar voting seats for a long time. So it'll be really interesting to see what gets nominated next year. Like, I'm really looking forward to seeing a little more variety just in the type of films nominated, as well as the, you know, diversity in the acting nominations and in a lot of it. So it's going to, I'm really excited for the changes. I really hope that this means that a lot of different types of films get nominated next year. And hopefully it'll liven up the show too, because they've been trying to fix the broadcast show for so long, like getting different kinds of hosts and all of that, and nothing has really worked. So maybe this will be the key to lightening everything up.
Do we really think it'll affect it so soon though? Like, it seems like a fair number of the old white guys would keep their Oscar voting for at least a few years before they start getting phased out.
No, you know what? You make a good point. I don't think so, because even if like they completely changed everything, like if they were super drastic and they were like, all right, so for the next 3 years, like only Black people or only Hispanic people or only like X insert people here can be nominated, like you would still have to wait like many, many years for there to be an equal amount of like Caucasian winners versus people of color winners. It just would never work that way. It's really going to have to be something that rectifies itself over many, many years. But on top of that, you're still looking at a film industry that's going to have to do a lot of work in terms of making sure that they provide opportunities for actors of color that deserve these roles to get the chance to audition for them and eventually win the roles.
It's nice because the studios are so revenue driven and they're resisting change so much because they're like, oh, well, we know what makes money and we're not going to like send Ray merchandise out there. That kind of attitude, you know, like that they still have. But the Academy, which is not, they're more conscientious under Cheryl Boone Isaacs, and they're saying, look, this is a problem and we have a responsibility to do something about it. And I think that it's a nice first step. But I think, yeah, obviously Caitlin's right, it's not going to change from one year to another,
right? Just to kind of clarify, I think this next year that there might be more change than you think if they're using that retroactive 10 years rule, just because that's a lot of really older guys and people who might not have made any sort of work in 20 years that have still been in the Academy. Like, I think if anything, you might see a dramatic change the first year, and then from then on it's going to take a lot longer to see, you know, to see more. We'll see. I mean, it all depends on what they nominate.
Yeah. It'll be nice to live in a world where like Deadpool fought opposite Straight Outta Compton, fought opposite Fury Road, fought opposite The Big Short, you know, all these different movies got to all compete together. It would be very interesting. And then you would have people complaining, oh, it's just all different types of movies. How are they going to choose? People are always going to complain.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens. It's interesting. The next story is not as positive, I have to say.
Yeah, speaking of having something to complain about.
Yes, let's do
what
that.
I did there. The release date for Star Wars Episode 8 has been pushed back 7 months from May 26th, 2017 to December 15th, 2017. And rumor has it, and rumor has been confirmed, that the studio is doing rewrites to the scripts to spend more time with Rey, Poe, and Finn, to which I have to wonder, who were we going to be spending time with if not this?
So funny, you know, because we always talk about how, like, oh, like, producers always say that they never listen to the fans. They try not to let the fans, like, dictate how they write things or this and that. And, like, here's a perfect example of how clearly it was leading to the fandom, which is really funny, but also awesome.
It's just so weird, like Caitlin said, like, who the hell was the movie about before? Because the first movie is obviously about Rey and Finn, not so much Poe. That's like a fan thing. So I could see how they would add more Poe based on the insane following he's gotten. But Rey and Finn
I was going to say, unless it was like the crazy adventures of Kylo Ren. Like,
well, that's the thing.
What the heck has Luke been doing on
that? I know. That would have been great. But that's just it. Like Kristen said, because like we know from that amazing article that did, which has gotten like a billion responses, which is great, is that Disney was like specifically encouraged to exclude Rey from their toy lineups. And they thought that Kylo Ren was going to be this huge cult figure, which, you know, seeing the movie, like, where did they get that idea? Because he's so lame. He's interesting, but he's lame. So, like, it really does beg the question, like, were they thinking people are going to be like, ooh, Kylo, how exciting. We're going to, like, track his temper tantrums all the way to the dark side. Like, I don't even know. But, I mean, I have to say, like, it's gonna suck to wait 7 months for it, but I would rather them take the time and have this movie be about the characters that I like. So I'm okay with it, honestly.
I hadn't realized the next one was coming out in summer. I was sort of assuming they were all coming out in winter. Yeah. So it doesn't faze me too much as long as we're getting the characters we actually care about.
Right.
And not more time with Kylo and his temper tantrums. That'd be great.
It's like that quote, you know, stop trying to make Kylo happen. It's not going to happen. I think they learned that already. Cool. So that's the Star Wars news.
And now we'll move on to a little bit of Marvel news.
Yay!
We got some interesting comments from Mark Ruffalo about Thor 3 Ragnarok. And this is not what I would have thought this movie was going to be about. Here's what he said. I'll give you a little bit of that. He says, there's a little bit of Midnight Run with Charles Grodin and Robert De Niro in Ragnarok. I feel like that's kind of where we're heading with this relationship between Thor and Banner. It's a universal road movie. That's where we're heading. It's not where you'd think it would be, so it's not your classic road movie, but it has that structure, I think. Huh. Yeah, not at all what I would have pictured for Ragnarok, which, if anyone knows anything about Norse mythology, it's like the end of days. Like, Ragnarok is not like time to hit the road.
It is, actually.
It is. Maybe they're gonna, I don't even know. I have absolutely no like guesses or theories as to what this will be like reading this, but I'm excited about it. Seeing Hulk and Thor together, like, you know, working together, I'm all for that, because they've been good fun when they have had scenes together in the Avengers movies. So
yeah, they've had like one scene together
too.
I know. You know what I love about this though is that, first of all, I love it because I did not see this coming. Like, this is way more awesome than I could have imagined, and it's such a perfect use of these two characters together. But I also just love that Marvel is very committed to this idea of the genres. Because, like, when they first launched, I mean, I know that Iron Man was sort of meant to be a different type of superhero movie, like kind of more of an indie feel, and they definitely pulled that off. But since then, it has sort of It's slid into generic territory for me, for a lot of these films. I mean, I've enjoyed them, but on a sort of, okay, this is a superhero movie and the colors are a little brighter, but it's still a superhero movie. But then with Captain America, it's kind of, again, listening to the audience and listening to what the audience wants. When the second Captain America movie was such a huge hit because it was more of a political thriller than it was a superhero movie, people really responded to that. So they're like, okay, we're going to make Ant-Man a heist movie. We're going to make Thor a road movie. We're going to make Guardians is going to have this different feel as well. They started to really commit to genre films, which I think is really neat. And as long as they don't make Captain Marvel the romantic comedy, I'm all for it.
Oh, man. Yeah. See, I'm all for it. Your little joke in this article is great. Like, Civil War is the romantic comedy.
I know. That's what I was hoping for.
That would be really ridiculous and super fun.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah. I don't even care which ship. Just any of them would be a great romantic comedy. So that's interesting. We'll keep you guys updated when we learn more about this road movie on the run from Ragnarok. It's going to be great. So moving off studios now from Marvel to DC, we have some interesting news about the Wonder Woman movie. I think earlier this week, too, we actually had some of our first footage from the Wonder Woman movie, which was shown at that DC event on the CW that came before the premiere of Legends of Tomorrow, I believe. And the studio, like the people involved, have kind of talked about how Wonder Woman is really sensitive and how she's really compassionate and she's really kind. And Chris Pine, going on Jimmy Kimmel, talks a little bit about how Wonder Woman is going to bring some much needed compassion to the DC universe. And, you know, he says just by virtue of her being a woman, there's a great deal more compassion and love. And, yeah. Great with some woman feels, I guess. This is so weird. Guys, what's happening?
Because she's a lady. She must be all lovey and compassionate, I guess.
I don't get this. This is so bizarre. Like, we were all busy being mad at Marvel for delaying Captain Marvel. And now DC, which, you like, seem to be setting up Wonder Woman so well. I mean, I'm not saying they're still not. But these kinds of comments are just so out of touch with everything. Like,
yeah,
it's so bizarre to me.
I'm hoping that we can blame this on the fact that he's just an actor.
Yeah, of course.
Like, if I hear this kind of stuff from the director or like Gal Gadot, I'd be a little more worried. But, you know, he's playing her love interest, so maybe that's the part of the movie he had the most he was in touch with. Whereas for Gal Gadot, it would be a little more fighting and a little more kicking ass. So hopefully when we start hearing more from her, it will get less of this.
Right. Well, it's only because we had that special too, where they kind of said a few things that had me like a little bit worried. And then this came and I was like, oh God, it's continuing.
Because the footage in Batman versus Superman, like, she seems
so
like the
badass.
Best part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not opposed to her being like a little more, bringing a little love and compassion, because Man of Steel and Batman v Superman looks like as dreary and grim and cold as you can get, and a little more emotion might be welcome. But I guess it's the whole, because it's the lady movie, that's where it has to be, so it kind of rubs the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Like obviously, having love and compassion is in no way a bad thing, but it does only become a bad thing when you say, well, she has that because she's a woman. And then actually, like, I hate to compliment Marvel on its gender portrayals, but one of the things that I do actually love about Marvel is that male characters, because there's so many of them, they get to be all of the things that would, like, both, like, traditionally male and traditionally female qualities. Like, Banner gets to be, like, a bit of a pacifist, and he doesn't really want to fight, and Iron Man, off the top of my head, I don't know, but he gets to be, like, very neurotic and very sort of other things that he gets to be, and Captain America gets to be more compassionate, and he gets to be more like sort of level-headed, and I like that they have all these different ways of being a man. Now they just need to have different ways of being a woman. And when you only have one woman and she becomes like representing all the women, then what you do with her, like we talked about this with Black Widow, what you do with that woman becomes very, very important. Whereas if you had more of them, like one of them could be like very loving and one of them could be very badass and et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Our listeners have been, our readers have been great. They've been leaving some very funny comments on that post. Anything else to say about that?
Hello? At least it's happening.
Yeah. That's true. You take what you can get. It's sad, isn't it? We're just so happy there's one.
We're so starved for some female superheroes. We'll take what we can get at this point.
And a lot of people have commented, too, that Jessica Jones is kind of the perfect example of the opposite of what they're describing Wonder Woman being here. That's television, but it's still a thing that is important. So that's good, at least. Okay, so moving on to something else.
Yeah, there's no transition into this. So I'm just going to get into it. If you live on the West Coast or you're coming out to the West Coast, you might want to plan your vacation around this if you're a fan of Hamilton the musical and can't get tickets in New York, because Hamilton's coming to, well, our article says LA, but I also want to point out that it's also coming to San Francisco because that's where I'm from. And I feel like there's a little SoCal bias here. But yes, either way, it's coming to two cities on the West Coast, which is really, really exciting. And it's going to actually launch out in San Francisco. And it's going to be here for 21 weeks, starting in March of 2017. Then after that, it's hitting LA's Hollywood Pantages Theater, where the play is going to be scheduled to premiere on August 11th, 2017. So that's really exciting. I don't know what I'm going to have to sell to like go to the show. Maybe you know, an organ I don't need, maybe a piece of my hand. I don't know. I'm just expecting tickets to cost like an arm and a leg. But yeah, it's definitely exciting. So if anybody's out here, you know, vacationing or whatever, it's probably going to be, you know, something you might want to do if you can't make it out to the East Coast. And slowly but surely, this play is kind of getting around to all those different cities that are, you know, big fans of Broadway and stuff. So that should be exciting.
This is really good news for you guys.
I know. Well, maybe one day, I'm sure it'll come to London soon. West End is pretty up and up on what's big.
Yeah, I'm sure. Caitlin and Kristen, are you close to any of these places?
I'm not. My parents live in Ohio, which is not too far from Chicago. So there may be a chance at me catching a Chicago show at some time in the near future. But yeah, nothing's really close to North Carolina right now. Oh. So we'll just cross my fingers that at some point I get a chance to see it, maybe in Chicago.
I'm sure the tour will come to Atlanta. We get Broadway shows on tour here.
Oh, that's
years later. So when it comes here, you can come visit me and see Hamilton in Atlanta with me.
Yay! Sounds like a plan.
That's nice. Yeah, I am. That sounds really good. It speaks so much to the demand for the show that is going on tour, and I really appreciate it. And I can only hope that one day there will be a movie. Everyone's hoping for a fantastic or a Cursed Child movie, and I'm hoping for a Hamilton movie. So there you go. So speaking of the Harry Potter world, that was a completely unintentional transition.
So moving to the Wizarding world, we are finding out that according to David Heyman, the Fantastic Beasts movie was originally imagined as a documentary. So they were kind of trying to figure out what they could do in the Wizarding world now. And they were like, oh, wouldn't that be interesting to do a documentary about Newt? And Joe liked the idea of doing a movie about Newt. And then the documentary got dropped. But I think that could have been really interesting. Like, it would have been a unique approach.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, because a lot of fans have been saying that they would have really liked a documentary, but I'm just thinking, like, who would be the target for this? Like, obviously we would be the target, but surely it wouldn't have a big... Like, I almost couldn't see it as anything other than, like, a DVD extra or something, just because it would be so strange.
Well, I mean, if you didn't have to have a lot of outside knowledge, like if you're going into a documentary, you don't always know what.
No, but like it wouldn't be an actual documentary because, I mean, spoiler alert, none of this is real. So it would be like a mockumentary. And it would be like telling a story about this dude that didn't exist, about these magical creatures that don't exist, and you wouldn't have the Harry Potter, like there would be no tie into Harry Potter necessarily unless they got the trio to like do cameos. So it would be like a very bizarre experience for like a general audience, I think.
Well, I could see them doing like the story that they're trying to do in the movie now, but just framing it in terms of a documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But wouldn't like, that be strange because none of it is real? Like, I don't know. I do not see this appealing to a wide audience, which is probably why they didn't do it.
Well, I mean, I can see it being something that you don't necessarily have to have read the Harry Potter books to have seen this. Like, if they did it as a documentary, you could have Newt be the entrance point. And so if you don't know anything about it, here you are watching this guy, Newt, go around and, like, give you information about all of these different, you know, magical creatures and all of that. I could see it working. Right. It would be really interesting. But I think, you know, you're right. It's probably a stronger narrative if you go with a full, you know, story and tell the whole tale. So I'm definitely excited for the movie anyway, but it would have been cool to do something as crazy as a fictional documentary.
It might be interesting if they did like an extra when the actual Fantastic Beasts movie comes out, like do a slight extra, like doing one scene in the movie, like documentary style, just to be like, this is what we could have done. Like, I just think it's kind of unique. Like this will be more commercial as is, but I think it's just, if you're looking for something original, this would be a little more original and could be kind of fun.
I don't know. You're right. It definitely would be original. I just really, again, in terms of wide, like, appeal, I cannot see how anyone would want to watch. It's kind of like the book, like the Fantastic Beasts book. Like, you're never going to pick this up if you're not like a massive Harry Potter fan, because all the information is useless. It's made up information about a made up world. And if you don't care about that world, then you're not going to care about this made up information. You know what I mean? But so constructing a narrative about it, now you care, because now it's a story. Now it's its own story. So props to them for going the more traditional route. And I agree, as a Harry Potter fan, it would be amazing. But as a moviegoer, I would be like, huh? You know, it would be like if they made a documentary about a Marvel villain or something. I don't know. It would be strange. It would be kind of cool, actually. Maybe I think it's cool.
Oh my god, I need a Loki documentary.
I know,
now.
I was just thinking that would be so cool. But see, it would be really funny because it would be like, what the hell is happening? You're breaking the fourth wall, but it would be interesting.
You know what, though? They kind of do that with, like, it's not a whole movie, but the Marvel short, All Hail the High King.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They did it with, what is it, the Mandarin from Iron Man 3. Oh. And they kind of follow him for a bit in jail because he's like locked up, even though he's an actor and stuff. So he does like some interviews, and then everything goes to hell because they have to lead into the next movie and stuff. But I think it would have to start kind of like that. Like maybe they could incorporate some documentary elements, but it would eventually have to backtrack and go back in time, and you'd have to see some kind of story that everybody could relate to, like you said. So
yeah. Well, interesting idea anyway. And it's fun to see what could have been. So moving on to television, we've got a big story here towards the end of the news, which is that Doctor Who has officially, you know, Merrima's first made-up title for 2016 is already coming true. Stephen Moffat is officially done as Doctor Who showrunner. He is leaving, not for a while yet. He's leaving after the end of the 2017 season, and he is leaving, and the new showrunner will begin in 2018. And this new showrunner's name is Chris Chibnall. I was so sure I was going to get that right. And this is very, very exciting news because he is actually the showrunner of Broadchurch, which is a really good show. It stars David Tennant, actually, interestingly enough. The first season of that show is mind-blowing. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but I was very, very impressed. And he's also written 5 Doctor Who episodes, including The Power of Three and Dinosaurs in a Spaceship, which is, so it's not like, I mean, and the rest of them are Cold Blood, The Hungry Earth, and 42. Like, none of them strike me as being particularly memorable, necessarily. Oh, but
see, Dinosaurs on the Spaceship is, like, one of my favorites.
Oh, did you like that one? See, I know a lot of people did. I didn't particularly like that one.
It's just so, like, out there and ridiculous, and for a bottle episode, because it was.
Yeah.
It was just really good fun, and with all of the dark and dreary that everybody knew was coming, it was kind of a nice little romp. So I really liked that one, but, you know, some of his others weren't necessarily as strong, but for me, that was a standout episode.
Mm-hmm. And also, he's written a couple of, or eight episodes of Torchwood, too, so he's very entrenched in this world. And, I mean, obviously, honestly, Moffat wrote some absolutely stellar episodes before he became showrunner, and people weren't necessarily happy with his approach to the show as a showrunner. So not writing the most memorable standalone episodes isn't necessarily a bad thing when he's going to take on the whole show. Although I will still say, I think a lot of what Moffat did in the early years was really good, personally. So it's not like we all hate Moffat on the show. I just want to put that out there. I'm still excited he's leaving, though, because he's, the last couple of seasons have not been very good. And with Clara gone, and they're looking for a new companion now to replace her for what might be Capaldi's last season, because there's also rumors that he will leave after next year, which makes sense because that pretty much means he's had as long of a run as the Doctor as most of the other people in the reboot era. It's going to be really exciting. You know, in 2018, we're going to have a new showrunner. We're probably going to have a new Doctor. We might have a companion we already know to tie us over. And it opens up so many new possibilities. I think I'm excited. I'm ready for Doctor Who to become something different.
Yeah, I kind of fell out when just after Capaldi took over, and it wasn't because of him. It was just because it stopped. It wasn't quite as much fun. Like, the whole show for me lost a little of its luster. And Karen is all caught up, and she said, "Kristen, you know, it's gotten really good. Like, there are a lot of episodes, you know, that are really great toward the end of this past season." So I do intend to catch up, and I do want to, you know, get back into it. But hopefully, you know, all of the changes make me excited to kind of jump back in and see where it's going to go from here. So,
I mean, yeah, we'll see what happens. I was the same, actually. I came into Capaldi's season all ready to be excited because I like him, but it's just the chemistry between Clara and the Doctor just did not work for me at all. Like, and I didn't particularly like her when it was Matt Smith either. And then she came with the new Doctor, and there was absolutely no, it all seemed very forced and very, like, let's be really funny in the bad way. And the storylines weren't very striking to me. I personally absolutely loved Matt Smith and Amy, that pairing, and with mm-hmm. Rory too. I loved it, and I loved the twists in those storylines. I loved a lot of the stuff that they went through together, and I really felt like there was a complete story that was being told with the three of them. With Clara and the Doctor, it kind of felt like they were treading water for a long time. And I caught up again with the last few couple of episodes of the season, and yeah, they were all right, but like at this point, it's very unclear where the story is going and what the point of the show is anymore. So I think they need to rediscover that. And the first step is getting a new companion to replace Clara. I'm looking forward to that next year because I think the actress is great. She's going to be starring in a new show called Queen Victoria, or Victoria, which looks really good. Just not and Doctor Who. So I'm excited. This is all good.
Well, we'll jump across the pond and talk a little bit about The Flash, because in addition to the speedsters we already have, and there's quite a few of them, we will be getting another one, only this time it will be a female speedster. Allison Page has been cast to play Eliza Harmon, a.k.a. Trajectory. If you've been watching the show, you know that last season we saw Reverse Flash, and this season we've been entrenched in figuring out exactly who Zoom is and what role he's playing. And it's opened up the Earth 2 world, which, yeah, there's a lot going on. But she's going to pop in and cause some chaos and blame a lot of it on the Flash and get a lot of it blamed on the Flash. So it's going to be good fun to see her and Barry go up against each other a little bit. And who knows how many other speedsters we'll see by the end of the season, because, you know, we've got Jay Garrick and Wally West, you know, on the show, even though they haven't done a whole lot of speeding. So it's just a crazy, very quick world going on in Central City. And it's good fun.
This season of The Flash is like Oprah. Like, you get a speedster, you get a speedster, you get a speedster.
It so much is.
That's great. And that should be exciting news for you too, Caitlin, because I know you've been talking about how one of the female characters in that show hasn't exactly been very well served. So it'll be great to get another one.
Or like any of them. That's right. I love The Flash. I adore it. It's one of my favorite shows, but it doesn't do very well by its female characters. And this character doesn't have a very good history in the comic books. She dies after not a very long time. Huh. So I don't know what they're going to do with her, but she probably is only going to be around for one episode, I would guess.
No, oh, that's unfortunate. And we'll be talking, actually, we've got some other DC related TV show stuff to talk about when we talk about our TV shows of the week. So we'll probably maybe get back to that a little bit. But before we do that, just shout out to some other news stories we didn't talk about this week, including the Allegiant trailer. There's a new Allegiant trailer. The main thing I took away from that is that Fora is wearing pajamas, and there's a big wall that's apparently super important. So that's exciting. You can find that on thehypeable.com. And The Hunger Games is coming out on DVD and Blu-ray in March, and they are also doing a special four-disc or four-film collection edition with lots of new characters and lots of just really cool content. We've got a clip from the final film up on hypeable.com, and we've got some more information about the DVD and digital release. The digital downloads will be available March 8th, and the box sets will be available on March 22nd. This will be very exciting. My browser froze, so I have no idea what's going on, but I think it's time to move on to TV show of the week. It's been a really big week for TV. I mean, lots of big shows have come back. We spent a whole show earlier this week talking about the premiere of The 100 season 3, and we've got some new shows as well. So let's kick it off with just continuing on our train of DC. Let's start talking about the new series Legends of Tomorrow, which premiered on the same night as The 100.
It did. So Legends of Tomorrow, we have known about this for a while. It's a spinoff of Arrow and The Flash, and it's featuring characters from Arrow and The Flash, and then is introducing Arthur Darvill as a time master, and he has
right.
Yeah, so
that was ridiculous. I'm sorry.
Back in all of this, so he kind of goes back in time to save his future from being taken over by the immortal Vandal Savage. And the pilot is actually a two-parter, and we've only seen the first part so far, but I thought the first part was very fun. It was pretty much the most comic booky thing you are ever going to see, and I kind of love that because it knows exactly what it is and just kind of revels in that. Like, it's like, we're going to be ridiculous, we're going to have a giant spaceship, and we're going to have these misfit characters, and they're not going to give a crap about anything. And they're going to get into bar fights, and it's going to be amazing. So it knows exactly what it wants to be. And it's brought in a range of characters from really good guys like Ray Palmer from Arrow, ranging to villains like Captain Cold and Huey from The Flash, and then mixing them all together. And it's kind of like, have at it. So they're based on the kind of way things are going, it seems like they're going to shake up how the characters interact and pair off each episode, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. as it moves forward, but I quite enjoyed the pilot.
You know what? I did too. And I really was not expecting to enjoy the pilot because I have such a shaky track record with getting into these superhero shows. I thought it was amazing. Like, the first half, I thought it was so ridiculous. Like, the dialogue and the premise and all of it, I was just, how is this on TV? You know, like, some of the things they say to each other, like, how do they say this with a straight face? It just, it felt like something that was a parody. But then I realized that that was, like, the show and that it was going to be like this. And I was like, okay, I can get on board with this. Like you said, like, it's completely unapologetic about what it is. And it's completely, like, just comic booky in the best way. And I was, like, surprisingly invested in some of these characters because, like, I haven't watched a lot of The Flash, so I don't really know. I don't know if Hawkgirl and the other guy have been in The Flash before. But they, like, their story really gripped me. I was like, okay, I can see how they have, like, this... I won't spoil anything in case you haven't seen it, but, like, I could get behind their story. And I mean, Sarah Lance, obviously, who doesn't want more of Sarah Lance? She was just great, just doing her thing. And Victor Garber from Alias, who I love, is in the show. And I mean, there were a couple of things I still take issue with. Like, I think the guy that he's paired up with is very one note at the moment. Like, he's very, like, I don't know. I think it was extremely, I hope they do more with him. Because so far, as a new fan who hasn't seen him before, he seems very one-note. And Wentworth Miller's character, I know I've seen him on The Flash too. Like, what is he doing? Like, what is he playing? I don't get it. He's, like, the worst. He's, like, he just looks at the camera and he's like, yeah, I can comprehend it. And that's just how he talks.
Yeah, it's just cool.
But I think it's so ridiculous. But I think it's kind of funny. But, like, he just basically is not acting. He's just looking vaguely off screen and, like, transforming his voice. But it's great. I do think it's great. It's just ridiculous.
That character is very over the top in the comics. So he is basically just being how that character is in the comics. Like, that ridiculous. And he just hams it up and chews the scenery every bit, and I think it's amazing every time he's on the screen.
Yeah, it's, like, gotten into, like, overboard where it's so ridiculous that I really enjoy it now. And and obviously Arthur Darvill is great. I'm glad to see him back, and I'm on board with this. This might be my favorite of the three shows, to be honest.
I was gonna say, I definitely was pleasantly surprised because I was a little skeptical of it. Mm-hmm. Going in, like, how can you make that group all work? But it works, and it's so ridiculous and so much fun. So yeah, I'm on board too. I'm with you guys.
I'll be excited. I'll definitely be keeping up with. It's one of those rare shows where I watched the first episode and I'm like, okay, I actually could go for some more of this. Except instead of thinking, oh my god, I have committed myself to so many hours. but you have, staying on the DC train, you are also talking about Arrow, Kristen?
Yes, only because I quite liked tonight's episode. It just aired a few hours ago, and it was really, really great because you had a lot of the Diggle brothers working together, and that was good fun. And I really liked the Felicity storyline. I know not everyone seemed to enjoy it as much, but I really liked what they did. And Emily Bett did some really, really great work. So Arrow's, I think it's, I liked a lot of the Oliver Felicity scenes tonight more than I've liked them in the last, like, season and a half. Like, it just felt more true to them tonight for me. And so it just, yeah, I rekindled my love for the show today. And
oh, nice.
So, yeah.
I'm happy to hear it. And Pam, what have you been watching?
So I've been, I watched Jane the Virgin on the CW, of course, so that would be a nice transition. And I just very quickly, because I've talked about Jane the Virgin before, I feel like the show, like, it doesn't ever cease to surprise me, which I always think is really nice, because sometimes, like, I kind of go a couple of weeks without watching it and then I come back and it's just so nice to get back into, you know, kind of something that's, like, silly but also has really touching moments, and it just kind of leaves you feeling nice. Sometimes it's nice because I watch a lot more, like, I guess, like, dramas and stuff on TV.
So it's nice to have like kind of like a go-to kind of comedy situation to check
out. Rogelio.
I know Rogelio. Rogelio de la Vega.
Rogelio, my Rogelio.
It's amazing. And but yeah, you guys know it's just such a fun show, and I'm so happy that it's doing well. But if you for some reason haven't checked it out yet, the first season is on Netflix, so if you have that, you should go marathon that. And then as far as new shows, I did tune into Lucifer, which is the new Fox show, and I was also pleasantly surprised by this because I didn't really know what to expect going into it, but I was intrigued because the plot kind of sounded very similar to a book I had read once. And if I don't know if you guys have seen it, but I just thought it was really fun. And like the guy that plays Lucifer is like really cheeky and kind of like goofy in an over the top, trying to be suave kind of way. But pretty much what happens is that Lucifer has decided that he doesn't want to be in the underworld anymore. So he just hangs out up in the real world with all the plebeians, and he owns a bar. And then a friend of his dies. And so he's out to find out who ordered the hit on her, teams up with this detective and kind of helps him crack the case because he's got these powers that make people tell him things and like reveal all their deep, deep, dark secrets and stuff like that. So I guess it's kind of like a Sleepy Hollow in a sense, where you have, you know, this unconventional guy teaming up with a very like straight laced woman. And I'm excited to see where it goes from here because the pilot was really, really fun. So,
yeah. I didn't love it as much as I thought I was going to love it. Unfortunately, I was very much expecting this to be great, and I didn't find it great. I love him. I love him and his character and the way he plays it. Everything about him is great. Unfortunately, I think the procedural thing is just not going to work. Like, it's like the one genre that I absolutely cannot get behind, unfortunately. And I also didn't like her very much, which I hate saying, but she just, to me, like, if you've ever seen, which I know you have, Caitlin, if you've ever seen the TV show Angel, there is a character on that show that she reminds me of in a bad way in the first season of Angel, if you know what I'm talking about. I don't want to, it's hard now, and like nothing can be spoiled now.
I know what you're talking
about. This is so cryptic.
I know.
I love it.
I'm just hanging out, pretending to ignore all. Right. I know nothing anyway, so.
It's not really that exciting even, but it's just like that type of character. Like, it just, that type of a female, like, it really just feels like wrong note for me. And unfortunately, she is feeling the same way on that show. I think there's a lot they could do with it, and I'm definitely not going to judge it on the pilot alone. But so far, I'm into the character, but not the premise, I think.
I do want to point out, too, like, if you like the character, like, you know, you just said you did, the book I was talking about is called I, Lucifer, and it's by Glenn Duncan, and it's so great. But the Lucifer in this book, he kind of has a lot of the similar cadences as Lucifer does on the show. And it's a slightly different premise. And it's pretty much the Prince of Darkness, or Lucifer, whatever you want to call him. He's given like kind of a second shot at life. And God says, hey, you know, you actually, we changed our minds. You can come live up here in heaven if you want. But the catch is that you have to live a normal, well-behaved human life in a human body on Earth. So he's kind of going through all these mundane human things that he's never really had to do before, but he's also very sassy, and it's told in like first person perspective. And I highly, highly recommend that book. It's one of my favorites.
Oh, interesting. I would definitely put that on my list. I also do kind of want to check out the Neil Gaiman, Sandman, cause that's where he's from, right?
I think so. Yeah. That's a great one too.
Yeah.
I like that one.
Just cool. A quick funny note about that. Last week, Supernatural gave a shout out to the new Lucifer show.
Oh, did they?
They had their own Lucifer in the episode, and he was trying to get back topside, and one of the characters is like, and then what are you going to do? And he's like, I don't know, move to LA, solve some crimes.
Oh, that show. Oh my gosh.
That's amazing.
They are the kings of self-referential jokes. I love it so much. So, Lucifer, let us know, by the way, listeners, what you guys think about all these new shows that we are talking about, because we're sure you guys have some great opinions. Another show that I want to talk about that I know Kristen wants to talk about as well is our beloved Agent Carter, who is back.
All the love.
And is fabulous and is better than ever. I know I saw Karen on Twitter. She tweeted me saying, like, this show is my everything. And this show is also my everything. Like, oh my gosh, it just, 3 episodes are out so far, and I hope you guys have seen them all, because I have, and season one, I binged it all at one point. I thought it was like, she's, again, the character is great, the format of the show was a little bit like, okay, well, I don't, you know, I'm not that into the events, but I really love her. This season is so good. It, like, everything about it is so good, and she's awesome, and she, like, barges into Hollywood, and she's like, I want to be the cowboy, and, like, just takes on all the bad guys, and she has some awesome new, like, love interests, and the guy from Dollhouse, Sousa, has a bigger role this year, which I appreciate, and Jarvis is hilarious. There's just nothing not to like about this show.
And his
and
wife?
Jarvis's wife. Yeah, she's so great.
And the flamingo?
Oh, the flamingo. Bernard, was it? I don't remember. Yeah,
the devil in pink. I was so worried this season wasn't going to live up to the last season, but it's been wonderful so far.
Yeah. It's just, like, such an escape show. And, like, Pam, I don't know if you see it. You I think you would really like this show as well. It's just, it's, again, one show that's so unapologetic about what it is and its message and its, like, plot from week to week. It's just, it's so engaging. And I kind of feel like if you guys, like, if you've seen Alias, like, that show is obviously a very different tone, but it's kind of like the same, like a female spy, basically, who, like, solves all these crimes. It's like the fun period version of that, and I love it. And I love her. Hayley Atwell is just fantastic.
Yeah, and Peggy and Jarvis together, like, last season, they were the highlight for me, and as much as we've gotten a little dose of just about everyone, and I've loved it all, those two on screen are just magic, and him becoming more sporty, and, like, it's just so much fun. You know exactly what I'm talking about, and that whole sequence just, Karen and I couldn't even breathe. We were laughing so hard. So yeah, I'm truly, truly loving season two. I can't wait for
me
more.
Too. And honestly too, like, it's not all just fun and wish fulfillment, even though there's a lot of that going on too. I mean, there's some really interesting stuff going on this year that ties in with the Marvel mythology in an interesting way. Like, not only do we have the character, Dr. Wilson, I think his name is, who sort of, the guilt that Peggy feels about him just echoes the guilt she feels about Captain America very, very strongly. Like, when she says, you know, he was a civilian trying to do good, and I treated him like a soldier. I was just like, my heart just, like, it hurt. And, like, when the woman was being frozen and you had that brief shot that was, like, the same as when Bucky was being frozen, and I was like, how dare you show? And I, like, got really upset. And it's just small moments like that, and how it all ties into what's happening in the Marvelverse in general is very ingenious. It's very subtle, but it's very good, I think. Even I understand it, which is a good gauge, because I don't pay as much attention to the lore as I probably should. So yeah, Agent Carter, highly recommend. And you know what's also highly recommended about Agent Carter is that for whatever reason, Netflix in Denmark lets you watch the new episodes like a day after they air in the US, which never happens with, like, any show. So I can watch it on Netflix the day after you guys watch it. And that's just, like, I really hope this is an indicator that this is going to start happening for more network shows, because it would just make my life a lot easier. So that's that. Thank you so much to the team who made that happen, because I appreciate that. And finally, Caitlin, do you want to tell us what you think about The 100 season 3 so far?
Amazing and heartbreaking and shocking, and Clark has red hair.
Yes.
And killed a panther.
Of course.
And there was an amazing car scene.
Yes.
Yes. And Bellamy is the love of my life.
Oh,
mine too. Kyle
is wrong.
Mine too. I'm so glad. Oh, I love Bellamy so much.
I am so excited for the next part of the episode to see where they're going and for Bellamy and Clark to reunite, because I am also a Bellark shipper, so I know nice. Those two. And somehow Murphy is likable, and I just don't understand how that happened. And
it's brilliant.
Somehow.
Snuck up on you.
Yes, it's amazing.
Yeah. So happy it's back, and I'm so glad the ratings were up, and oh, it's such a good show.
Absolutely. And as I said at the top of the show, like, we had so much feedback on the special we did for the 100 earlier this week, and people are asking us for the 100 podcast, and I'm like, my hand is on the trigger. I'm going, I really want to do this, but I just, it's finding the time to do it would be extremely difficult. So we'll definitely, okay, we can't unfortunately promise to commit to that, but I think this is a good indicator that we are going to do more specials about the 100 as the season progresses. And we've obviously, like, the show is so good and hypeable staff members are, like, discovering this one by one. It's only a matter of time before Pam and Marima finally get watching it.
Dude, what's so funny? Mm-hmm. My sister, every day, my youngest sister, she's not that little anymore, but every day she sends me a snapshot that says, right, watch this show. It's so good. It's just a screen cap of the 100 on Netflix. So
yeah,
it's going to happen between both of you.
Yes.
After Pretty Little Liars, after I finish binging Pretty Little Liars.
Oh, well, that'll take a while.
I'm on season 3. It's okay. Not that far away.
But yeah, so definitely look out for more The 100 content on this hype feed, because we are all fans and it's not going to be hard to get a panel of hosts together to discuss the episodes. So we'll let you guys know what happens with that. Definitely keep an eye out. And the hypeable is frozen for me, and no one's done hot on hypeable, so that's going to be really difficult this week. But what I do want to just shout out really quickly is that if you guys are listening to the show but you're not familiar with hypeable, please go on the site and check out some of our TV show recaps/reviews, because we are doing very fun things with those. We're trying not just to be like, this is a recap, here's what happened, this is the storylines, but we're actually like sharing our analysis and pointing out the best moments and discussing different characters and different storylines of all the shows we cover. So please, there's a section on the right hand side where you can find all the latest recaps for the last week. Do check those out, and hopefully you enjoy that, because we put a lot of effort into those. Moving on to listener feedback, we have a lot of listener feedback, but we do just want to race through it all because we appreciate it all. We want to race through this that we have here because we appreciate all of the stuff you guys have been sending in, and we want to just talk a little bit about some of the many comments that we've been getting. So the first one comes from Amy Wainwright. Kristen, do you want to get that one?
Sure. She says, thanks for a great podcast. Quick question. Do any of you watch Wentworth? I discovered it on Netflix a year ago and am obsessed. Season 3 was just released in the US and I plowed through it in a week. Everyone that I have suggested it to loves it as well. That said, I cannot find any podcasts about it. Maybe it's not such a big deal in Australia as I think. Hoping Marima can let me know. Thanks again, Amy from Boston, Massachusetts. I've never even heard of this.
Mm-hmm. Me neither.
So that's, I'm always on the hunt for new things, so I'll probably, like, you know, read the synopsis, like, go on Netflix and check it out and see if what it's all about.
So I just looked it up, and it sounds like it's kind of an Orange is the New Black situation, because the little synopsis on IMDb says B. Smith is locked up while waiting for her trial for the attempted murder of her husband and must learn how life works in prison. So it might be good if you're kind of waiting for something like along the lines of Orange is the New Black and you want to fill the void. This might be a good way to do that.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Pam, do you want to get the next one?
Sure. Gave me like the super long one. All right. Olivia says, hi Hype, I just finished listening to the 100 special and wanted to send you a quick email. I know I currently blow up y'all's Twitter, and in parentheses she gives us her handle, which is om cantrell, over the 100, so y'all know I have tons to say. I wanted to talk about Clark's scene with
Nyla.
Nyla, thank you. I know you guys mentioned it on the show, but I think there's a very important piece of the scene that we are missing. In any other action-y sci-fi post-apocalyptic show with a male protagonist, there's bound to be the male protagonist running off hooking up with random ladies who swim and fall for him with just one look. In a few hours, he's up running around and saving the world without a thought of that woman he has just left behind. He normally is sexually active as a way of coping with something and or letting off steam, and is generally no remorse for sleeping with multiple people. And as the audience, we don't care either because he's the man, and manly men do things. This is so funny out of context. And manly men do manly things, so we generally just accept that, even though it's a trope and being a man has nothing to do with sleeping with lots of people. I mean, even Bellamy in season one was running around having threesomes and the like. Hashtag whatever the hell we want.
Sorry for giving you that one, Pam.
This scene was about breaking down so many barriers and stereotypes, not just about bi women, but about women protagonists in general. Clark and Nyla? Nyla, thank you. Slept together because they wanted to in the moment, partly because Clark is our protagonist. She gets to do that. She gets to wake up and leave and barely blink an eye and run off to go save the day or get captured. Semantics. IRL, not staying till morning is a shitty thing to do. In show life, it's not weird at all. It's just that normally we see our males doing it. Second, Jason did mention on Twitter something about paying attention to Nyla. Nyla, got it. Nyla, third time's a charm, guys. Nyla's tattoo, but I don't know what it means, but I can't wait to find out.
Great. Pam can't wait to find out either.
You know what, Olivia, you've totally sold me. All it took was, you know, threesomes. I'm just kidding.
Ah, that was season one, guys. Oh, so weird. But yeah, no, definitely great point. And we didn't talk about that at all. And it's one of those things that the Hunter just so casually does that we don't even notice. Because it's just like, you know what, this is our world and this is just normal. And gender roles don't mean what we think they mean. Or what we assume they mean. So that's very, very nice. And thank you for that very thoughtful email. And Yannick Linhai, Caitlin?
Yannick says, hey, Hypes, guess what I did over Christmas break? If Selena's there and screaming, you watched The 100, she's totally right. 10 points to you, Selena. Now, here are my thoughts written as I most definitely said them to my laptop while watching. Clark, you are hashtag awesome.
Do you think Lexan, he pronounced the hashtag when he was watching?
I mean, I speak in hashtags. Okay. So, so do
I. Guilty.
Hashtag whatever hashtag the hell guilty. We want. Lexa, really, she's your husband. Bellamy, I know we had our issues in season one, but let's get back together. Now take your shirt off. For God's sake, Thelonious, just die already.
Aww. Kill all of these. Everyone hates Thelonious.
Also, on a really unrelated note, are you guys planning to... This is a really unrelated note.
Oh, yeah.
Are you guys planning a High School Musical special in honor of its 10-year anniversary this month? I know it's not exactly current fandom, but I'd love to hear an entire special dedicated to the ridiculousness that is the High School Musical trilogy. I'll even join you guys or send some notes in case you get flustered. You're now dedicated The 100 fan, Yannick.
You know what?
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, I actually watched this special anniversary thing for a work thing. So I will give you my thoughts very quickly, Yannick, since I don't think we're going to get to a special. But I didn't realize, like, first of all, how young everybody looks. So that was, like, my first thought while watching. Second of all, I thought it was really nice that it kind of still stood up for what it was. It's not, like, the best film in the world, but it's really cute. And then also the cast interviews in between all the commercial breaks were really awesome. And I just love, you guys, that Zac Efron has, like, so much, like, unashamed love for this movie, because I feel like being as big of a star as he is, it would be so easy for him to be like, yeah, like, I'm super embarrassed I did that. But he, like, genuinely, like, never talks bad about High School Musical. Like, you can tell it's coming from a genuine place when he says, like, oh, like, that actually has a special place in my heart. And he had some really nice things to say. And I was just like, oh, that's so cute. I died a little bit, just a little bit.
Well, there you go. That's our super mini Hype special just for you, Yannick. And just wrapping up with some comments from from Twitter and from hypepeople.com. Ashley said, just finished Illuminae. a little over a week ago, and I absolutely loved it. Amy was a great special guest. She really added something great to this episode of Hype. Also, very much enjoyed your thoughts on Oscar So White. You guys summed up my thoughts perfectly. And yes, by the way, I didn't even say, we had Amy Kaufman on last week, obviously, and she did such a great job. It's so amazing. And I told her already she's back anytime because that was so good. Allison also talks about Illuminae. She says, I'll definitely be adding Illuminae to my list, which is great timing because I just finished the second book in the Red Rising series. Oh, maybe it was Allison who recommended it. Yay, exciting. I'm about to start that, Allison. So she needs a new book. Another fun fact, the Star Hallow / Rosewood set is going to be used as one of the sets for Grease Live, which I'm actually really excited for. They've released lots of promos behind the scenes and interviews, and it looks great. I really hope that Hypebubble will cover it on the 31st. Oh, is that going to be on a TV channel?
It airs this Sunday, I believe. It's on Fox, the new, yeah. Yeah, I'm Fox.
Let's hope so.
Sunday at 7.
We covered some of them, but we didn't cover The Wiz, so I don't know if we're going to be covering Grease Live, actually.
I'll talk about it on here,
okay,
if that makes you guys feel better. I meant to talk about The Wiz, and then I just forgot that I had seen it because so much came up that week. But yeah, I'll talk about Grease Live next week for you guys.
Sounds good. I'll look forward to it. And Kristen, Pam, and Caitlin in that order, if you just want to get the last three tweets.
Lindsay Howard at LindsayM_Howard on Twitter says, just started Illuminae because of your show and I'm hooked. Thanks.
Great.
I haven't read it, but I know that book is on Karen's shelf, so I'm going to have to go figure out what this great book is that everyone's talking
about.
So at Stephanie Merrill says, at Merrill White, although at times it was tough to read due to unforeseen obstacles, #nappy. Oh, we didn't put the rest of this tweet in, but... Stephanie also read Illuminae, and she sent us these really cute pictures of her little nephew playing with the book, and it was like the cutest thing ever. So she finally got through it, but, you know, like she said, she had some unforeseen obstacles.
Right.
But thank you for your adorable pictures. They were so, so cute. We loved it.
Yeah, we did. It was so good.
And Jess Bagtis has a question for Pam. Says, on Hype a long time ago, you mentioned a documentary that dealt with the music industry / record stores. What was it?
Yes, that is actor Colin Hanks's documentary called All Things Must Pass. And it is absolutely wonderful. I highly recommend it if you're looking for something, you know, a little more informational to watch.
Great. Well, there you go. We answer all your questions. Please keep them coming. And again, for the third time, thank you so much for all of your thoughtful, 100 comments. We should have a special just answering all those questions because it was so great. The response to this has been really encouraging, and we really appreciate it. So if you want to send in comments about this episode of Hype or about any of the specials we've done or anything you want us to do in the future or any of the stuff we've talked about this week, please email us hype@hypeable.com. Find us on Twitter @hypeablehype and find us on hypeable.com, which is hypeable.com. We'll be back next week with a regular show where we'll talk about the news as always. Until then, have a great week, everyone. My name is Selena.
My name is Pamela.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye, everyone. We did it.
Bye.
That was great. No one spoke over each other.